This morning, we have one bill, House Bill 2203. This is a bill that is at the request of the Oregon Government Ethics Commission, and I'm going to ask Betty Reynolds, if she would open this up and walk us through this bill. I will say that I did have a couple of questions to ask you, so...
Here's something else.
Identify yourself and go ahead.
Chair, members of the committee, I'm Betty Reynolds, the Director of the Oregon Government Ethics Commission. With me is Jolene Siegel, who's chair of the commission. To set the framework for the bill before you, I'll provide a very brief background of the commission. Seven-member commission, which was administers both government ethics and lobby regulation laws, was created by ballot measure in 1974. In general, lobby regulation laws require anyone who exceeds 16 hours or $50 in a calendar quarter attempting to influence legislative action to register with the commission, and once registered, they're required to submit expenditure report, and their employers or clients are required to submit annual expenditure report. In addition, there's prohibited conduct. Lobbyists are prohibited from lobbying in exchange for success or failure, or compensation for which is based upon success or failure of their lobbying, otherwise known as contingency-based lobbying. Lobbyists are also prohibited from making campaign contributions during a session, and there are other prohibitions. Government ethics laws require public officials to announce potential conflicts of interest. There is a code of prohibited conduct, including a prohibition against acceptance of gifts in excess of $100, prohibition against use of office to obtain personal financial gain for oneself, family member, or associated business, and prohibition against use of confidential information, etc.
Jerry, I'd like to interrupt you. You said the $100 gift, that's accumulated over a year.
In a calendar year from a single source with a legislative or administrative interest in the public office. There are about 4,000 to 5,000 public officials who are required to annually file statements of economic interest with the commission. In carrying out its duties, the commission is authorized to issue advisory opinions, it's authorized to conduct investigations, and all records of the commission are public. I think Oregon's lobby and ethics laws compared to other states are relatively moderate. They place an emphasis on satisfaction of the public's right to know all the records of the commission are public records. Emphasis on public records versus a lengthy or exhaustive list of prohibitions. The commission's objective in requesting submission of House Bill 2203 is really to clarify existing laws. The laws have been in existence for 10 years, and it's been the experience of the commission that they're working, but there's room for housekeeping. There are definitely some proposals that are going to generate some discussion, and I'm not going to imply that the whole thing is just a very non-controversial housekeeping measure. With your permission, I'll just quickly run through the various sections. Section 1, page 1, line 22, clarifies the definition of lobbying. The reason the commission makes this proposal is that the present definition of lobbying is influencing or attempting to influence legislative action. However, in 1975, the phrase by direct communication was deleted, so we're presently left with a relatively broad, relatively vague attempting to influence legislative action. The language that the commission has submitted is very broad, and it was a broad starting point, and I would like to note at this point that we do intend to submit amendments that goes the other direction. We'll essentially reinstate that through oral or written communication, so it will narrow the definition of lobbying. The purpose, though, is just to give us something more definitive or more easily understood and explained than attempting to influence legislative action.
Now, Betty, if the members wish to ask questions as you go through this, at the time. I think we get, so if you don't mind, if you interrupted by someone wishing to ask a question, I hope you don't mind.
That's fine. Please do so.
Are we going to take questions as we go along, Mr. Chair?
Yes, because I think we've got a 15-page bill, 26 sections, and I feel if you ask it at the time, it will be more relevant to, you know, then we don't have to try going back and retrace ourselves.
Sure. Yeah.
Representative Spring.
Just backing up to line 21, what's the purpose of that? It seems to me it kind of narrows the definition a bit. That's a new language there.
The committee, that's yeah. Part of the legislative branch. In theoretically, a commission established by or responsible to the legislative assembly could include executive branch commissions. And in the commission's review of the history, it was the commission's opinion that it's intended to be limited to the legislative branch.
Has there been a problem with, what kind of commissions are we talking about that there's been a problem with, or question about?
Representative Springer, I'm sorry, I can't provide specific examples. I could give you examples at a later time, but this problem has occurred on, a handful of occasions.
Well, let me guess, like Commission on Indian Services, is that one that, where there's some ambiguity or?
No, the ambiguity has been with executive branch commissions, because it says, commission established by or responsible to the legislative assembly. Theoretically, that could be any executive branch commission.
Okay, and you feel it's inappropriate to have those folks covered under the definition of legislative official?
If it's the legislature's intent to include the executive branch, the language as it stands is fine. The commission's reading of the legislature's intent is that it was intended to apply only to the legislative branch, therefore we feel that it's a housekeeping
okay.
Amendment.
Thanks.
Sure. Section 1, line 28, clarifies that corporations may not register as a lobbyist. The present definition of lobbyist is any person, etc., who lobbies. And the rules of statutory construction contained elsewhere include corporations within the definition of person. Consequently, there are a few examples of corporations who have registered as lobbyists. There's no indication of an individual lobbyist. Page 2, line 2, clarifies that lobbyists include persons representing partnerships for sole proprietorships. The commission was concerned to learn in 1981 that individuals who represent their own personal financial interests but aren't being compensated by others or who aren't representing another organization might not be required to register. And I think a very conspicuous example some of you might recall is someone named Bob Harris who spent substantial time and money who potentially wasn't required to register.
Messenger Bob.
Pardon me?
Messenger Bob.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Jones.
Can I back up just a minute, Betty? I want to clarify and make sure that on the first page of the bill, the definition of lobbying now, as I'm reading this, my question is, those people preparing testimony or research for someone else would not be or would be required to be registering as a lobbyist?
Representative Jones, Mr. Chair, the commission does intend to submit an amendment at a later time that would strike everything past through oral or written communication with legislative officials. It's our intent to submit amendments that would strike that language regarding solicitation of others.
Okay, but you don't have that prepared yet today?
No. I was told there was a 48-hour deadline for amendments.
There is a 48-hour deadline by committee rule, plus Betty and I had a long discussion on this bill in my office yesterday, where she also revealed that the Ethics Commission will not meet again until February 20th, and whatever comes out of its hearing this morning, she may well want to present it. Both these ladies may want to present it. And so after today, we will probably not see this bill until after the Ethics Commission meets to allow them time to digest what is going on here, because there are some as I'm sure it's no surprise to you, there are some concerns by various interest areas.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Warner.
Just to clarify the amendment you would seek, are you, you're going to place a period after the word communication in line 23?
A period after with legislative officials.
Period there in delete the language with respect to research and preparation of testimony and so forth?
That's right.
Is it your idea that that also means that when you're computing the 16-hour requirement with respect to influencing through oral or written communication, that, you know, somebody can spend 16, 17, 18 hours preparing that, but still wouldn't have to register if the direct communication was less than 16 hours?
That's
that correct?
Right.
Thank you.
Section 2, page 2, line 34, and in other places, we'll clarify that lobby registration requirements require each lobbyist to clearly identify an employer or client. As part of registration, the proposed language would require that identification and not the lobby firm or corporation for whom the lobbyist works. Page 2, line 40, makes the reporting of shared business interests between lobbyists and legislators consistent. Right now, lobbyists are required to report any business of which the shared business interest with a legislator as any business of which the person or a member of the person is it, or excuse me, it would add a more restrictive definition in government ethics laws. Currently, lobbyists and legislators are required to report that shared business interest in two different methods, and this would make that reporting requirement consistent. Section 4, page 3, line 4, would require lobbyists to identify quarterly expenditures on behalf of each employer rather than a total amount of expenditures. Currently, each lobbyist is required to submit quarterly expenditure report, but there's no requirement that those expenditures be broken down on behalf of each client.
Betty, I want to, let's talk about Associated Arden Industries. When all our clients are also their members, and you're talking about 3,000 or 2,000, I don't know how many members they have. It sounds to me like we're asking for an awful lot of paperwork. That may not give us what we want, or maybe we don't need it. How do you answer that? I mean, are you proposing that an organization such as that, and I'm not just picking on them because there are others that have a large number of clients, or their clients are also a membership, you know, what are we going to do with 2,000? I mean,
I have communicated with several different multiple client lobbying firms, and we're in communication, and there is some hope that we'll propose amendments that would say something like where there are clients with diverse interests, but a group such as Associated Oregon Industries, where there's a commonality of interest, it may be that they can simply, each person who exceeds the 16 hours or $50 would register and simply show the association as an employer.
And have the other on file anyway.
That's right.
Because what I see is a double filing system here. Mm-hmm. We've already got the basic information from year one with the updating, and then you try to do another one, and I don't think the archives can hold it. See, I'm not trying to be smart. I'm serious.
No, I agree with you. With those with multiple clients where their interests are very similar, I'm not sure that I'm going to serve necessary purpose. But where it's an association with multiple diverse clients, it's our hope that the individuals and the expenditures be clearly identified by client interest.
Okay, I'm going to have to step out. I've got this is a weird day for me, so I'll be back in the vice chair. Thank you.
Section 5, page 4, line 9, we'll develop an escalator based on a consumer price index on expenditure threshold required to be reported by lobbyist employers. Presently, lobbyists are required to itemize their expenditure on behalf of individual legislators or business officials based on consumer price index driven figure. That figure is currently at $29. However, through possibly just a drafting error, the threshold for lobbyist employers is still at $25. It's the commission's intent that those two thresholds be consistent between lobbyists and lobbyist employers. Section 6, page 4, line 29, would extend the prohibition against acceptance by a legislator of campaign contributions from a lobbyist during a session to candidates. The proposal is in response to a problem that arose during the 1984 primary, in which a candidate apparently solicited both contributions or some sort of employment from legislators. And this proposal admittedly doesn't address that problem specifically, but it's as close as we could come given the current structure of the law.
Does what I'm hearing you say is this includes candidates even if they're not in office at the time?
That's right.
If they and as declared candidates, or if they filed for, if they filed a committee, or at whatever point they are.
That's right.
Okay.
Page 4, lines 30 through 41, would address a similar concern regarding campaign contributions. Presently, the list of enumerated prohibited conduct in lobby regulation laws prohibits lobbyists from making and legislators from receiving campaign contributions during a session. The proposal is simply intended to clarify that those contributions are contributions within the meaning of campaign finance laws contained in Chapter 260. However, the proposal would further codify what the Commission has already advised through opinion, and that's that lobbyists shouldn't use a political action committee as a conduit or a shield for making an otherwise illegal contribution during a session. Section 8, page 5, lines 19 to 22, clarifies that although the policy statement which precedes government ethics laws, which essentially authorizes, potentially authorizes the holding of incompatible offices, clarifies that although such office holding might be permitted, those individuals are required to observe the remaining requirement of government ethics laws, particularly requirement to disclose all potential conflicts of interest and the prohibition against use of office for personal financial gain. Section 9 adds several definitions and terms which appear in the elsewhere in the body of the law. For example, the Commission is proposing adding a definition for planning, zoning, and development commissions. It's proposing adding a definition for the term honoraria. In addition, the phrase member of household is proposed to be substituted by the Commission with the term relative.
Where are you? Oh, line 39. Where you are.
30. The term relative.
It's also at 39. I just.
Okay. The term relative would be defined far more broadly than is currently defined, to include
39.
Spouse, brother, sister, child, parent, father-in-law, or mother-in-law. Section 9, page 6, line 7. Current statutes prohibit acceptance of certain gifts by public officials, but exempted from the definition of gift is any gift which is extended to others who are not public officials. Further, gift is defined as something for which no valuable consideration is received. The bill would codify the Commission's interpretation of that particular exception as that for the exception to apply, it must be the equivalent value for the gift given, and also that it's exempted only if it's offered on the same terms and conditions to others who are not public officials. In other words, you can't give a piece of bubble gum for a Cadillac.
Can I stop you a minute, Betty?
Sure.
a gift means something of economic value, which seems somewhat clear. Then what a gift is not indicates on item C, the receiving of food, lodging, when in the participation of an event. Does this mean that dinners, coffee, lunches are included as gifts in this definition? Unless they are in relationship to an event?
By administrative rule, the commission has exempted from the definition of gift anything which is consumed on the occasion.
Is this going to change that rule?
Madam Vice Chair, no it wouldn't. The proposed, are you referring to the proposed addition of where you'd be required to have a position on the agenda or appear in an official capacity? I don't believe that would change the administrative rule that still says if it's consumed on the occasion, it's not a gift.
Regardless of whether the person is a part of the program or not, a program exists. Are you going to propose clarifying this, or you think this is adequate?
I will review the commission's administrative rule to assure that there's no inconsistency created by the bill.
Okay.
Comment on that at a later time.
All right.
Madam Chairman?
Yes. Representative Miller?
Yeah. One of our purposes is to give the commission some feedback for their meeting before they get the opportunity to come back here. I would tell you that I'm going to move at some juncture to delete that new language in lines 15 and 16. I think it creates more problems than it seeks to cure.
All right, thank you, Representative Miller. Anyone else? Okay. Go ahead,
Jerry. In my prepared testimony, I'll explain the reason for that exemption. As you know, the current statute excludes from the food, lodging, or travel where the public official is participating in an event which bears a relationship to the public official's office and when appearing in an official capacity. And the commission has received many, many inquiries whether that exemption would apply, for example, to a sporting event where they're simply sitting in the audience as a spectator, but they've been invited because of their status as a public official. And it's the commission's intent to make it clear that no attendance at a Trailblazer game is not considered an event which bears a relationship to your office and at which you're participating in your official capacity. But we'll make note of your intent. Delete that. Section 10, page 7, line 1. Present law requires disclosure of potential conflicts of interest. However, the code of ethics, another place in chapter 244, prohibits the use of office to obtain personal financial benefit. The commission is often asked whether announcement or disclosure of a potential conflict then means that a public official whether it immunizes a public official from violation of the code of ethics. In other words, is it permissible to announce potential conflict and then act and thereby realize personal financial benefit? And the proposed amendment would make it clear that simple disclosure does not then permit a public official to act for their personal benefit.
Okay, a question on that?
Yes.
You said that this would clarify that you could not declare the conflict and then realize the gain. Didn't you mean to say have the primary intent to realize the gain? It seems to me people can declare conflict, have their primary intent to benefit the community, but have a natural effect that it will benefit them. As long as that's not their intent, it seems to me it's appropriate.
In taking action on complaint, the commission will look at three elements regarding the use of office for personal gain. The commission has looked at whether there was official action, whether there was actual gain, and they'll also attempt to determine the officials' intent at the time. However, they haven't relied solely on a statement of the public official, simply that they intended to benefit the greater public, and when they in fact realized substantial benefit themselves. So yes, that's correct. Intent is a criteria.
Any further questions on that? Okay, go ahead, Betty.
Section 10, page 7, lines 11 through 14, would place a greater burden on public officials who make purchases on behalf of a public body by prohibiting their acceptance of any gifts. I would like to mention that there's been some informal discussion of a proposal that would replace the prohibition with a reporting requirement, and the commission has not yet taken a position on that. Section 12, page 10, lines 18, 19, and elsewhere. Current statute requires candidates for office, as well as incumbents, to file statements of economic interest. So the commission has added the word candidates wherever the specific discussion of information to be reported on statements of economic interest is discussed. There was some confusion on the part of candidates where they read the statute and see only a mention of incumbents reporting requirements. Section 14, page 11, lines 9 to 17, would delete the current requirement that any person who ceases to hold public office file with the commission a supplemental statement of economic interest within 30 days. The commission has found that requirement is virtually impossible to enforce, and there's very limited information that's made available, sometimes only a few days or months. Section 19, page 12, line 26, clarify the method of appointment of commission members. The present method of appointment is one each by the House and Senate majority and minority parties, and three by the governor. The current statute doesn't specify what role, if any, the caucuses play, and the commission has experienced some confusion or delay during if a vacancy occurs during an interim and a caucus isn't scheduled to meet. So it clarifies that the leadership is responsible for making the appointment to the commission vacancy. I'd also like to add a note that there's commission will propose an amendment at a later time, which would eliminate party affiliation as a criterion for any legislative appointment. Section 21, page 13, line 5, would authorize the commission to conduct random audits of both lobby expenditure reports and statements of economic interest. Currently, the reports are simply received and filed, and there's no audit or other analysis of the forms unless a complaint is received.
Betty, can I stop you there? Do you currently have the ability to do that? I'm just not doing it, or does this enable you to do that?
There's no explicit authority. I think there's probably implicit authority in the commission's ability to carry out its duties. This would make it's the commission's feeling that this would improve its opportunity to request funds to conduct audits.
Ah, okay.
Page 14, lines 4 to 9, would permit the commission to retain its own counsel. And the primary reason for the proposal is because state employees, including the Attorney General and the Department of Justice employees, are subject to government ethics laws. So because the Department of Justice represents and provides counsel to state employees, the commission feels there's an inherent conflict of interest for 40,000 plus public officials. As a final note, I'd like to add that the commission does intend to include among its amendments to be submitted later a proposal to close its investigative records. Currently, all records of the commission are public records, and we will be proposing making investigative records confidential.
Madam Chairperson.
Yes, Representative Bunn.
Representative Bunn. But as you know, there's been a live discussion over the years about the probable cause hearing, the first stage of the process, and the fact that it is open and the person can go through that initial stage, be found completely innocent of any wrongdoing through that probable cause hearing, not go on to the final hearing process. But in the meantime, that entire process has been drugged through the news media. And the damage of the small city council member been done, and we heard it when I was a member of the commission, people state, after going through that process, I'm all done with public service. What's your feeling and what's the commission's feeling at this point about any protection for public officials as they go through that preliminary stage? The reason I ask the question, if you make the investigative records non-public initially, that has very limited value, it seems to me, because you still publicize all of that at the point of preliminary hearing. And if the person is found not to have done anything to warrant going forward the full hearing, you still have it completely covered in the news media.
May I speak to that, please?
Yes, of course, go ahead.
As the chairperson of the Oregon Government's Ethics Commission, I'm speaking at this particular
moment. Excuse me, would you state your name for the table?
Jolene Siegel, Beaverton, Oregon. As chairperson of the Oregon Government Ethics Commission, I'm speaking...